From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. More than a quarter of Iowans are now obese, and the National Centers for Disease Control reports the obesity problem is increasing in our state. This hour, we'll talk about efforts to combat the obesity epidemic with programs such as Live Healthy Iowa and Iowans Fit for Life. We'll also talk about a new Iowa State University study concerning childhood obesity. And we'll speak with Des Moines native Rebecca Meyer, who was an at-home winner in NBC's The Biggest Loser. She's now a certified personal trainer at a Pilates studio in Des Moines. That's all coming up this hour. First, the news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Iowans are gaining weight. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The number of obese Iowans has increased in 2009, 25 to 29%. 25 to 29% of Iowans now report being significantly overweight or obese. So this hour, we want to discuss this obesity epidemic in our state, in the nation, as a matter of fact, what's being done to combat it with programs such as Live Healthy Iowa, Iowans Fit for Life, and the Iowa Sports Foundation's Go the Distance program. Joining us in this first half hour, Gregory Welk is joining us, associate professor in the Department of Health and Human Performance at Iowa State University, also in the Department of Kinesiology. Welcome to you, Professor Welk. Professor Welk, I don't hear you. We'll try to clear up that in just a moment. Michelle Immels, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Could you hear us?
Hi, Michelle. Now, Greg Welk is there. Professor Welk?
Yes, I'm here as well.
Okay, very good. We didn't hear you at first. Glad to have you on board. Want to mention you're also Director of Clinical Research and Community Outreach at Iowa State's Nutrition and Wellness Research Center. Michelle Immels is with you in Ames, Adjunct Assistant Professor of Kinesiology and a researcher at Iowa State University's Nutrition and Wellness Research Center. Michelle, Greg, welcome to our program.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us on.
In Des Moines, our Des Moines studio, Rebecca Meyer joins us. She is the at-home winner of NBC's The Biggest Loser last year's season, season 8, now a certified trainer at Gigi's Pilates Studio in Des Moines. Thank you for making time for us, Rebecca.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Rebecca, I'd like to start with you. I want to talk, have you talk a little bit about being on The Biggest Loser, but let's talk about before that. tell us, how early did your weight problem begin?
Well, for me, my weight problem started at about age 7 or 8. It was when my mom actually went back to work. She had an in-home daycare up until about the age about 7 or 8. And you can literally see, not only in the pictures on the wall of my mom calls the grow hall, of between 7 and 8, my cheeks got chubbier and I gained a considerable amount of weight. Mm-hmm. And not only did I notice it in the mirror, but my classmates noticed it and started saying things about it. My mom became very aware of it and wanted to try to help, wanted to try to compensate for feeling like she had, you know, quote unquote left, but she was going out there and trying to provide, and she worked nights so that she could, you know, take us to school. My father is also in the picture, so it was just the dynamic between the me and my mother that I think sort of set me into a sneaky eater, and where my weight issue sort of began.
So what was your weight situation prior to being on The Biggest Loser? You're in your early 20s, we want to say that,
yeah.
Right? Last year you were on The Biggest Loser. So to get on that program, what was your weight situation there?
I started out on The Biggest Loser Ranch at 279 pounds. Mm-hmm. My capacity weight was 304 pounds.
That is a weight that you have been at one time in your life?
Correct.
304 pounds, and you're 5'? Six?
Yeah, about 5, 6 and a half. Yep.
Okay. So a lot of weight on that frame.
It is. It's a lot of weight. It's definitely was tough carrying that around.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that at the age of 14, I weighed 235 pounds. So I went from being a sort of chubby, overweight child to a, you know, middle schooler and a high schooler that, you know, had a severe weight problem. And decided that I wanted to do something about it and tried so many different diets, so many different things. And it just came on and I just strived to be so normal, but I just could never find my own normal.
You never
normal.
Found the key to doing that.
Correct.
So, okay, so you're on The Biggest Loser. What regimen did you have there? And I know that involves the Pilates studio where you work now. They were your partners there, along with Daniel Wright. He was your partner on the show.
Correct. I was on The Biggest Loser. It was rigorous working out and nutrition. You have to fuel your body properly. And so when I came home, I had to, you know, find a place that would be somewhat like The Biggest Loser Ranch. And I was lucky enough to find Gigi's Pilates studio and personal training. And Gigi and Rodney Filer took me under their wing and trained me. And I lost 73 pounds on the ranch, but I lost 68 pounds here at home in almost the same amount of time.
So you lost a total of 139 pounds, I understand.
Correct, in six and a half months.
In 6.5 months. What was the toughest part of losing that weight?
I'd say the runs on the treadmills, and the realization that about 100 pounds down, that I was never going to be fixed.
What do you mean by fixed?
I went into going on the show and I'd been a heavy kid and a heavy adult and a heavy teenager, and I just wanted to be quote unquote normal. And I realized after losing 100 pounds that I had to find my own normal, and that it was going to be something. This was the start of the rest of my life. This wasn't the end of my journey. It was only the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we want to pick up with where you are now, because your career now has blossomed into working with children in fitness. But first of all, I want to talk to Greg Welk and our other guest, Michelle Immels, about a study. You developed a model to gauge how likely children are to become obese. Professors Welk and Immels, explain what you studied, Professor Welk.
Sure. It's a behaviorally based screening tool that we call the Family Nutrition and Physical Activity Screening Tool that we developed it in partnership with the American Dietetics Association. But the concept is that we have a series of 10 simple items that have been shown to predict the risk of a child becoming overweight, and by linking them together in one tool, we can give parents an idea of their child's potential risk of becoming overweight before they're overweight. So I think the one key message is that we're trying to provide a tool that can be used to help prevent childhood obesity before it starts.
Okay, so these are 10 questions that anybody can ask and answer of their children. And where do you find these questions? Because I'd like you to go through a few of them.
Sure. We actually have been working on this project for 5-6 years with the American Dietetics Association. So it started from a comprehensive evidence analysis that we did in partnership with the ADA. And we systematically reviewed the literature on a variety of different topics. For example, is physical activity or is screen time related to obesity? Other colleagues from Berkeley and Harvard actually were involved in the project, and they reviewed other questions related to diet and included things like, for example, is eating breakfast shown to reduce the risk of a child becoming overweight?
And what is the answer to that?
It does. And other simple questions in the literature that have been shown over and over again is that if parents allow a TV to be in the child's bedroom, that increases the risk of a child becoming overweight.
Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted to ask about, too, because modern life, our internet age, does pose additional challenges that previous generations of kids have never faced. In fact, we had the 1950s, of course, the advent of the big television era, but now we have even more reasons to sit stationary in front of a screen.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's the video games are pretty compelling today, and it's harder for kids to be active. I guess our position with this is that it does start with the family, that parents are the gatekeepers because they determine the environments that children have access to and also establish policies in the home environment, how much TV a child can watch, whether the family eats meals together, those types of things. So the concept of the tool is that it can be used by parents to help them know if they're doing the right things to help reduce their child's risk.
We'd like to reach out to our exchange listeners and have you describe your struggle with maintaining weight. Have you lost a significant amount of weight? What was the key that you found? Or are you still despairing because you haven't found the key to cutting weight, getting on a healthier path in life? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. I want to have you, Rebecca, can you list off some of the questions that we just touched on, a couple of them? Just list them off so that we recognize these questions.
The questions that
I was meaning to go to Michelle, first of all, because
yes.
You were, as part of your doctoral dissertation, you worked on this tool.
Yes. Some of the questions, as Dr. Welk just mentioned, include whether the child actually eats breakfast, whether the family eats a meal together. Those are two very important keys. Whether the child consumes fruits and vegetables and they eat freshly prepared meals rather than prepackaged or fast food type meals, how much activity not only the child but also the parents get. As Dr. Welk mentioned, it's also a big key with role modeling and the type of environment that the parents set up in the house for the children. And so it's important that the parents are also doing these behaviors as well. So those are some of the things that we looked at, as well as sleep has been shown to be very much related to a child's risk for becoming overweight if they're not getting enough sleep at night. Screen time, as we sort of capture all of the different aspects of television, computer time, now with all of these social networking sites, along with video games, children aren't supposed to have more than 2 hours of screen time a day. And a lot of children obviously mm-hmm. get more than that between all of the different aspects of screen time that are out there.
Now, with sleep, I'm just curious, because you would think a sleep-deprived child, what is the connection there between not getting enough sleep and eating too much? The why of it is what I'm looking for, I guess.
It's not necessarily related to eating too much, I would say. Sleep is related to your body regenerating and growing. And if you're not, the metabolism's resetting and all of those sorts of aspects. And if you're not getting enough sleep, then the child is not able to do all of those things that need to happen at night. And so it's just related to obesity in that way.
Okay. Rebecca, you're nodding your head vigorously over there. I want to go to you after this list of questions, because you recognize yourself as a child in some of these questions, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely. I actually had the list of the 10 questions that you guys actually thought up. And a lot of them are questions that we ask the kids that we work with at Gigi's Pilates Studio and personal training in our Curl program. One of them that rang true to me that you didn't mention was, does the family use food as a reward? And do they restrict unhealthy foods? Using food as reward has been something that has been take close to my heart, just because I was, an overweight child. And knowing that some of the kids that I work with, this is some of the issues that I think that a lot of families in this day and age face. Mm-hmm. The reality is that children nowadays are going to the parents are actually potentially going to be outliving their children. That's the society of children that we're raising now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a scary thing to know.
Now, talk a little bit about your fitness work in Des Moines at the Pilates studio, Gigi's Pilates studio, because you work with 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, young children who already have weight problems.
Yeah.
So do they – what is the spectrum of children you see, as far as – do they all have more or less your story to some degree, or do they come to overweight, their overweight condition through a variety of paths?
Well, what's great about our program is there's very few programs out there. They just sort of miss the mark when it comes to this sort of idea of overweight children. What we're doing is, getting parental involvement. We're empowering these children, and we're putting them in age-appropriate sort of groups, because those different issues may not be the same. They may be the same age group, but at least they maybe will deal with them a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
What's great is that Daniel White, also from The Biggest Loser, who's my boyfriend who lives with me and works with me at Gigi's Pilates Studio and personal training, he was an overweight child as well, and he was sort of deprived, went to a Weight Watchers meeting at the age of six. And sort of was food was monitored his entire life and got to 454 pounds. I was allowed pretty much anything I wanted in moderation with, you know, with that. And I also got to over 300 pounds. And so we have not only a dynamic of former obese children, but a former pro football player who works with children in the Empower to Play, and also Gigi Filer, who is has the education to back all of this up. So you have all these different aspects that we're working with these children.
Professor Welk, let me ask you, once this screening tool has been used and you've identified your child as someone, what is the various outcomes you can have once you take this screening tool, these 10 questions?
Sure. There's actually a lot of different applications for the tool. One is for use in BMI screening programs in schools. So a lot of schools across the country, not necessarily Iowa, but other states require BMI screening in schools. And so schools will send
Body mass index.
Right. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. So that's a measure of weight relative to height. But they require some type of report that goes home to let parents know how their child's doing. And these have been controversial. Some parents, you know, have complained about it and saying, why should the schools be doing this, or why are the schools telling me things I already know? But in Arkansas, for example, it was actually shown to be effective. So in Arkansas, they were one of the first states to do this, and they've found that rates of obesity have gone down, largely from awareness. But our position would be that what parents really want is they want to know what they can do about their child's health and how to help them their child be healthier. And so we're working with several states on possibly including the FNPA tool as part of the BMI screening, so that when a child receives the report, they also can take the online version of the tool and evaluate their home environment, and then they get immediate feedback on the screen of what they can do to improve their home environment.
Is that tool available now online to our listeners?
We have some demo sites available. It's, again, developed in partnership with the American Dietetics Association, and they're working to integrate it into things that, like a registered dietitian would use in their clinical practice, as well as, you know, it's currently designed more for projects, for example, research teams, physician offices, school programs, that type of thing.
Okay, let's go to our first caller, 1-866-7-1-866. Let's go to our first caller to... This is Harvey in Twin Lakes, Iowa. Good afternoon, Harvey.
Good morning.
Good afternoon to you. Into the afternoon.
Right.
What do you have on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is I was not grossly overweight, but I was up close to 220 pounds. I'm 6'2", and my doctor told me that if I would lose 10 pounds, I would be surprised at how my cholesterol and my blood pressure and my glucose numbers would improve, because they were not all that good. I stopped using sugar for the most part. I had a real sweet tooth, no more sugared pop and all of that. And I'm now at 190, and he was absolutely right about how my numbers improved. In fact, my blood pressure has gotten to the point now where next time I go in to the doctor, which would be in a month or so, he said he may take me off my blood pressure medicine because I'm at a point now where I'm getting dizzy sometimes because my blood pressure is so low.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say is the key what was the key for you in the mindset that changed for you, Harvey, in to take off those pounds?
You know, success breeds success. And I just decided to try, and lo and behold, I was at 217, and then I was at 212, and I thought, you know, this is really working good. And so I continued. I became more and more motivated to get that weight down to a goal of 200 pounds that actually went beyond that. I stabilized at about 190 now. And it was largely due to eliminating sugar and seeing some success.
Harvey, thank you for telling us your story. Thank you, and continued good luck with keeping the weight off. Harvey from Twin Lakes, Iowa. Thanks.
You're welcome.
What would you say, Rebecca Meyer, what was the key for you? I know, have a list of various keys, and I remember reading that retraining your palate was a big key for you. What does that mean, to retrain your palate?
Well, the reality is that for me, I didn't have a sweet tooth. I had like a salt and fat tooth. And I like pizza and beer and wings and all that kind of thing. And so I had to realize that when I went on the ranch, that I was eating salads and chicken and all these sort of things, and that my brain all of a sudden, and that my palate was like, oh, this stuff is bland. I need some ranch dressing to put on it, or something of the sort. And when you start eating things that are better for you, and you know that they're better for you, and just like our caller was saying, that, you know, success breeds success, it's contagious. Once you start seeing how these changes do something different to you, you want to try to maintain eating what you're eating, and then your palate sort of starts liking those different things. Whether it's your brain telling it, just because it likes you being able to fit into those size 8 jeans, or whatever it is to you, it's sort of one begets the other for me. And it just sort of was like making my own pizzas and making them better, because I still like those things, but making it a little bit, little bit easier on my waistline.
Professor Welk and Professor Immels, how will your study fit into the future? Let's talk in the remaining couple minutes we have here about how your study fits into context of reducing obesity in Iowa.
Well, we're hoping that, as we mentioned before, that we can get it in the hands of people who can provide information to these families. If you can get it to pediatricians and school nurses and healthcare professionals that are working with children and working with families, then you can have the simple screening tool. Right now, you go in for your well visit every year, and your pediatrician or your family doctor will sit down with you and talk about different issues, but not necessarily some of these items. So we're hoping that this is something that can eventually become widely used, and it's a very simple, easy checklist, and you can see what issues a family is having, because again, all of these things are related to childhood overweight, but it may not be everything in your family. So you need to know what's specific to your family and your needs and what barriers you have. And we're hoping that, again, healthcare professionals can work with the families on overcoming some of these barriers. And mm-hmm. in the future, we're also hoping to create some online tools that can work with people, because, again, a lot of the types of interventions that work are very costly, very time intensive, and they do work. But when you take the money away, when you take the people away that are working with people and helping with weight loss programs, then the weight tends to come back, unfortunately. And so we're trying to create things that are going to be very user friendly and that a lot of people will have access to, and provide information and help to these families to make these changes to help prevent their child from becoming overweight in the future.
Professor Welk, in just a few seconds, what do you see as your biggest challenge?
I guess reversing the mindset about how weight is being viewed in society. One point that I made at the beginning is that we hope to be able to intervene before a child's overweight. So a lot of times our current screening methodologies only detect that a child's overweight after they're above the 85th percentile. So after they have a certain excess body fat, then all of a sudden they're labeled, and that's too late. So primary prevention would say we should intervene before. I guess the other point I thought of when I've heard the callers and the discussion is that one key point is, I think people focus too much on weight per se, rather than lifestyle. So if you're physically active and you're overweight, you're at lower risk than somebody that's physically inactive and normal weight. So physical activity matters.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. We'll leave it there. Professor Gregory Welk, thank you very much. And Michelle Immels, thank you very much from our Ames studio. Fascinating to hear about the studies at Iowa State University. Rebecca Meyer, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And when we come back, we'll talk about efforts to combat obesity with programs right here in Iowa. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and today we're discussing the problem of obesity. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the number of obese Iowans increased in 2009. Now 25 to 29% of Iowans now report being significantly overweight or obese. You can join our conversation with your story of struggle with weight, your success over your struggle. Perhaps that's what have you found to be the trick to shedding those extra pounds and keeping them off? Or are you still despairing because you haven't found the key to cutting weight? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. And this half hour, we're going to talk about some programs available to Iowans that you may want to take advantage of if you or a member of your family struggle with weight. Joining us now, Tom Newton is the director of the Iowa Department of Health, Dennis Haney, community health consultant for Iowans Fit for Life, and Nicole Bruce, health initiative director for the Iowa Sports Foundation, all in the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines. Good afternoon, and thank you for making time for us today.
Good afternoon,
Ben. Thank you.
Tom Newton, you can't be happy about these Centers for Disease Control and Prevention numbers. 25% to 29% of Iowans report being overweight or obese. What does that exactly mean, overweight or obese?
Well, overweight or obese means that, and I think it's pretty easy to understand, you're carrying around extra pounds beyond what you probably should be. Mm-hmm. And by doing so, you're putting yourself at significant risk of chronic disease, whether that means heart disease, cancers, diabetes, or even things such as knee problems or hip problems. All of these are the result of, in one way, obesity or overweight status. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a real challenge for the state of Iowa. It's a real challenge for the nation at this point that too many of our citizens are carrying around extra pounds.
Once you were named the director, you were motivated to set an example. I understand you yourself had a weight problem.
I did, and was very successful in shedding about 30 pounds did so using the Live Healthy Iowa model. And I really had two motivating factors, the first of which is that I thought it was a bit hypocritical to be the state health director and out there talking about the importance of wellness and weight control and I myself carrying around extra pounds. So that mm-hmm. was one of the motivating factors. The second being is that at the time when I decided to lose the weight, I had 8-month-old twins. And I decided that I wanted to be able to do things with them that if I was carrying around this extra weight, I might not be able to do. So that was really what made me make the change.
So tell us more about in details about the program that helped you take off this weight that is available to all Iowans.
Sure. It's the Live Healthy Iowa Challenge, available starting in January every year. It's a 100-day challenge. In the health department, we made a concerted effort to try and get the word out and really practice what we preach in public health and tried to boost the number of teams that were participating in the challenge. I was a part of a team and had some great teammates that helped motivate me to change the way I look at food and change the way I eat food and also get me more physically active. And over the course of the 100 days, I was able to shed about 20 pounds, 25 pounds, and then throughout the summer continued on with the behavior change and was able to lose about 30, 35 pounds total.
So when you look at food now, do you look at it differently than you did before? You evaluate it before you take it, put it in your mouth?
I do. The biggest thing for me was just the amount of food that I was eating. Portion control was huge in helping me to lose the weight. You can still enjoy some of the foods that you like. It's just a matter of how much you eat of them. And that was the big thing for me is really controlling how much I was consuming.
Exchange listeners, we'd like to have you join our conversation this hour. Describe your struggle with maintaining a healthy weight. What have you found to be the keys to shedding those extra pounds and keeping them off? 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. Nicole Bruce, Health Initiative Director for the Iowa Sports Foundation. Tell us about the program Go the Distance Day, a program in Iowa's elementary schools. We were talking about childhood obesity, right?
Sure. Yeah. Through the Iowa Sports Foundation, we actually have three different programs for targeted at children. We have the Live Healthy Iowa Kids program, which is endorsed by the Governor's Challenge. It's a 100-day program, which mirrors our adult program as well. And through that program, it takes place primarily in schools, but can also be just family teams, scout troops, 4-H clubs, different community organizations. And they track their minutes of activity, their fruit and vegetable consumption, milk and water intake, and then also screen time in an effort to reduce that. So it's just a fun way for kids to kind of track what they're doing in efforts to build those healthy behaviors and some education.
You know, unhealthy diets, eating too much food, not enough of the right foods, that takes a long time to get in the habit of doing that. And, you know, in the schools, it's great that they're setting the direction for a new path here. But how do you really change someone's habit as a young person, especially when they're only in school a few hours a day? The habits have to be changed at home, don't they?
Exactly. I think it's both things. And we definitely target it through the schools, through education. We've got some curriculum pieces that go with our program as well to kind of help the teachers to do that. We also target those teachers in the school to do our Live Healthy Iowa program to get the adult aspect involved and provide good role modeling to the students. And then, you know, through our community-based program, Live Healthy Iowa, also, we try to get parents involved. Then we're hoping that, you know, parents will be educated about that, be sharing it with their children. The children will share with the parents and offer what they're excited about, you know, is in health and fitness, and just that everyone will work together to kind of make everything healthier.
Tom Newton, you wanted to jump in here.
Yeah, we have a phrase that we're starting to use in the department, and Dennis is really the one that keyed me onto this, is you need to make the healthy choice the easy choice. And a few years back, we adopted a Healthy Kids Act, which really attempted to remove the junk food from schools and allow schools to, or at least take those candy bars and soda pops out of the classroom setting, or at least out of the school setting. And what you're seeing is those schools are now putting in milk and water and healthy choices, fruits and vegetables. And
how effective is that, though? Because I've heard, being a father of children myself, sometimes one alternative for children, and we all know this, those of us who are parents, is you can present them with a healthy alternative. They will find a way to find, if they want it, the unhealthy alternative. And that has surely happened in this case, in some cases, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's going to happen. But you're going to find kids that haven't been exposed to fresh fruits and vegetables that all of a sudden are and decide that this is something that they have a taste for. And they're going to say and demand it when they go home. I would like more fresh carrots. I would like more fresh fruit. And that's really where we're trying to affect the behavior, is those people who are willing and receptive to that change.
Dennis Haney, I want to talk to you in a minute, but first of all, I want to go to our first caller. A lot of callers chiming in today describing the struggle with maintaining healthy weight, perhaps a success story or two to share. Cheryl is joining us from Des Moines. Good afternoon, Cheryl. Welcome to The Exchange.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, Cheryl. You have a story to tell us? You've been
Been doing weight loss for about 10 weeks. I'm down about 33 pounds, and my sister, who lives out in Denver, I told her about it, and so she decided she wanted to try the same approach, and she's at 274, and she's now down 50 pounds, seems to be losing it much faster than I am. And it's what both of us, I think, needed was a more comprehensive approach, because we both tried diets that didn't work. And so what we're doing is we're eating small meals six times a day, and putting activity into our lives at least three or four times a week, walking for 40 minutes. And some resistance exercise, but the idea is to really eat healthy, prepare your own food, and not eat a bunch of salt and sugar and those sorts of things.
So Cheryl, at what point and why did you come to the conclusion that you really had to make some drastic changes in the way you were eating, in the habits you had as far as exercise? Was there a turning point for you?
For me, succeeding to lose 18 pounds, I think, through Weight Watchers, and then putting it all back on and then some, made me realize that I had to do something more and understand why I kept eating the way I was eating, why I would go back to it when I would stop eating healthy. For me, packaged foods do not work. Packaged foods set me up to eat too much when I stop dieting. And so I think it's a lifestyle change.
Okay. Thank you very much, Cheryl from Des Moines, for sharing your story with us. Continue good luck with that. Cheryl joining us from Des Moines. Let's go right to Paula in Coralville. Hi, Paula. What's your story?
Well, I'm a compulsive overeater, and I think that's something I always myth in stories about obesity are some of us folks who are at the far end of the spectrum. I lost and gained probably over 500 pounds in my life. 100 pounds, gained it back to 150, lost 180 pounds, gained it all back, and had bariatric surgery 10 years ago and have been able to keep it off.
Bariatric surgery is, remind us what that is?
Oh, I had a Roux-en-Y, a bariatric surgery, which is stomach stapling and bypassing the intestine so that I don't absorb as much food.
Okay, Paula, can I ask you to turn down your radio? And I want to get a response here because we see one of the struggles that we have, and I don't know who in our panel can perhaps we can go to you, Dennis Haney, because you can talk about recommendations for individuals. People cut weight, they gain it back, they cut it again, and when you keep doing that, you get into a pattern, well, I'm going to fail. I can muster this change in lifestyle only so long, and then I slip back into my habits. What's the key to getting out of that rut, that back and forth, that yo-yo of weight?
I would say on the individual level, that Director Newton really summarized it well, that it does come down to lifestyle change rather than going on a diet and looking at a fad diet, which so many can be successful in the short run, but eventually we hear so many stories of those failing and regaining that weight.
So diet has a temporary feeling about it.
Exactly.
When you say, I'm going to actually fundamentally change my lifestyle, that's nothing that ends next month or 2 months from now. It's
exactly.
Something I'm going to be forevermore if I'm successful.
So in my own personal experience, it was very similar when I looked at health changes I wanted to make in my life. Instead of looking at just changing the way I ate and increasing my activity, actually incorporating that into my lifestyle. And that's where we typically hear most people have the most success, is it becomes fundamental to their life. It becomes a priority. And those things are integral mm-hmm. then in what they do on a daily basis.
Paula, if you're still there from Coralville?
Yeah,
Paula?
I would just want to add that I think the studies have shown that like it's in 95% of the people who lose over 100 pounds regain it. So that was one of the reasons I went to bariatric surgery. And even bariatric surgery has some regain. And bariatric surgery is by no means a quick fix. I still struggle. I have to watch my sugar. I have to exercise. There's nothing sadder than to see somebody who has gone to that very drastic step and then regained after, losing 100 and a half, easy.
Okay. Paula, thank you for Paula, thank you for sharing your story today on the Exchange. Paula from Coralville. Let's go to East Moline. Mark is in East Moline. Hi, Mark.
Thank you. This is a very good forum. Dr. Welk, I really appreciate what you're saying, and what I want to address quickly is a
Dr. Welk was on the first half of the show. Right now we have Tom Newton, Dennis Haney, and Nicole Bruce on. But go ahead. I'm sure they can handle your question.
I'm sure they can. What I was originally calling for is to make people aware that there is a big psychological aspect to all of this. And I am 6'1", and I weigh 125 pounds. And what I want people to really understand is that I would never make fun of a fat person, but they have no idea what a skinny person has to go through to keep enough weight on their body to be, quote, healthy. And sometimes my daughter has said this. She's 25, and she's built just like me, so I think it's genetic. However, it's just so hurtful, and I want people to get over that aspect,
mm-hmm.
and I'll just listen.
Okay, thank you very much. A very different perspective, Mark, from East Moline there, too. So the idea is that we can have variations in our weight on our frame, our BMI index, our body mass index here. How do you go about finding your right weight? Because we could look at ads in newspapers, magazines, on the television, and think we all have to have a certain body type, but in fact, we don't. How do you find your ideal weight where you feel healthy, comfortable? And then Mark was addressing the greater societal thing where people may make fun of one extreme or another.
That's an excellent question. And when it comes to ideal weight, there are two directions you can look at that from. So you can look at suggested weight ranges for your height and your frame, or you can look at it as what is most comfortable and most healthy for you individually. And so certainly for each height and for both male and female, there are ranges of what is considered a healthy weight range. But really individually then, what is most appropriate for you? So are you an individual who with your weight carries that mostly as muscle mass, or is it more excess fat? Does it fit into your lifestyle? Are you able to be active and do what you like? If you have 8-year-old twins at home, are you able to get down on the floor and play with them, or is that too much of a burden? So does it fit in your life, and are you able to be happy and healthy as a result?
1-866-780-9100. Julie is joining us. Where are you calling from, Julie?
I'm calling from Olwine.
Olwine. Julie, welcome to our program.
Hi. I have been in the grossly obese category all of my life, and I have had experiences being raised on a farm, but we didn't have a lot of money. And then when I got to work and was able to become more comfortable financially, I was able to make different choices that. And I'm just wondering, I've now cycled back to being in the disability category on very limited income, and I notice that making good choices is extremely difficult as far as in the grocery aisle mm-hmm. when you have very little to work with. And I wonder, you know, I look at the prices in the stores, and as you get away from the bigger cities and out into the rural areas, the farther you get away from the bigger cities, the higher the prices go. I've also heard that the poverty, what, 1 in 7 now have slipped into poverty. And I'm wondering how this is looked at by the experts and moving forward with this, to look at this from a perspective of having very little to work with and trying to make good choices in the store.
Julie, excellent point. I've heard this a number of times, is that does it cost less to overeat and eat packaged foods? That's a big problem, isn't it, Dennis?
What Julie brings up is something that we call the economics of obesity. And she makes up a really valid point that in many areas of the state and across the country, unfortunately, eating healthier either is more expensive, and having access to things like physical activity in a safe environment can be more difficult. It really can come down to access, whether to food or to physical activity. And on the other hand, in some cases, it may be more perception than reality. And so certainly on an individual basis, I wouldn't begin to judge whether it's an issue of perception or reality. But one simple example when it comes to access to food is that we have kind of polar issues. In rural areas of the state, you may have to drive 30 miles or more to get to a full access grocery store. So if your only access is a convenience store in a small community that you live in, it's much less likely that you're going to have access to things like fresh fruits and vegetables. You're going to have much higher access to potato chips and sugar-sweetened beverages. On the other hand, the same issue can be true in large urban areas, where in a poorer area of that community, people may not have access to vehicles, and there may not be full-service grocery stores in their neighborhood as well, mm-hmm. and they may not have the resources to get out to the suburbs.
So Tom Newton, director of the Iowa Department of Public Health, how do we address this problem of access and the price that it may cost to get the fresh fruits and vegetables into our houses?
Well, I think we all recognize, even though we live in the breadbasket of the world, we in some cases live in a food desert. You know, not as many fresh fruits and vegetables are grown in the state of Iowa as I mean, it's mostly soybeans and corn that people are growing, and not as many people have gardens out there as they once did, maybe 20, 30 years ago. I think it's encouraging to see things like farmers markets popping up around the state. You would find per capita wise that Iowa probably has as many farmers markets as any state in the nation. I think on a national perspective, we really need to begin to look at where our food comes from and where we grow certain foods. And if there could be some attempt to begin to diversify the agricultural crops in the heartland, maybe we aren't so dependent upon California and other parts of the country or foreign countries.
Quickly, before we have to go in a minute, but are there any moves in the state to do so, to diversify our crops so we have more local foods that are grown just down the road?
I think you're seeing more hobby farmers that are beginning to take that up. And any way, shape, or form that we can encourage that to take place, it's going to mean more access to fresh fruits and vegetables for Iowans.
Okay. I want to thank you all for joining us. It's been a delight to have you. And we've had Tom Newton, director of the Iowa Department of Public Health, with us, Dennis Haney, community health consultant for Iowans Fit for Life, and Nicole Bruce, health initiative director for the Iowa Sports Foundation. We'll check back in and find out how we're doing with our weight here in Iowa at a certain point in the future, but thanks for now.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Ben.
And The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins, Alex Hoyer, and Lindsay Moon. Production assistance today from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from Jonathan All today. John Pemble as well. In Ames, we had help from Michael Yeager. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio available by going to iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.